The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And a very good morning to you. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's Donal Cavanagh with you until 12 noon today. A packed show as always. We want to discuss the issues of the day, but we also want to reflect what you're thinking of and the issues affecting you this morning. If you'd like to get in touch, please do so. You can call us on 074 912 5000, 00353 749 125000 if you're outside of the dialing area. You can text or WhatsApp us. Of course, it's 086 60 25000 for either text messages or WhatsApp. They'll both get to us. You can email comments at highlandradio.com. We are, of course, on social media, Highland Hub on Facebook, at Highland Radio on X. And if you want to engage with us online, you can watch the show unfold over the next 3 hours as well. We're on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland, and also available across our Facebook pages on Highland Radio as well. We will, of course, be broadcasting various guests in studio and on Zoom, and you can watch all that unfold on your TV or tablet or laptop or however you access your media over the course of the day. Now, it's Monday, the 11th of August. Monday means it's time for the local newspaper first. That's the Donegal News. And the headline on the front, road project won't be impacted by A5 standstill. Louise Doyle writes that Donegal's biggest infrastructure project won't be impacted by the standstill on the A5. €600 was committed last year for the A5 Northwest Transport Corridor. And the worry now is that with the A5 potentially being held up again because of legal issues, will that impact on the 10T, which of course includes work on the road from Letterkenny to Lifford and then from Lifford onto the border hooking up with the improved A5. Well, the Donegal News is reporting this morning that it will not be impacted and the government will proceed with the 10T, and hopefully that will happen sooner rather than later, because we have been waiting for that 10T. I mean, there's elements of the 10T we have been waiting for literally decades. I recall some time ago I had a conversation with Councillor Patrick McGowan, and I reminded him of a debate that happened in the council chamber in Lifford. It was probably late 1990s, but I remember well Councillor McGowan, who at the time would have been a relatively new councillor. He was speaking passionately about the need for a Twin Towns bypass in the council chamber in Lifford. He had moved a motion, and former councillor Alice Bonner, as I recall, had seconded that motion, and they were calling for immediate action to proceed with the Twin Towns bypass. And Councillor McGowan came out with the classic line, "Cathaoirleach, if something isn't done about this now, we could be waiting until 2010. And that's what was being said about the Twin Towns bypass. The Twin Towns bypass, part of that 10T project. It's now 15 years after 2010. And what's happened with regards to the Twin Towns bypass, which is one of the three integral elements of that 10T, we all know exactly what's happened. Pretty much nothing. Front of the Derry News this morning, Palestine Action protesters handed police letters, and when you turn inside, you see a picture of Kate Nash, who was a former chair of the Bloody Sunday Justice Group, and she was very involved, obviously, over the years in getting the Bloody Sunday marches organised, but she has been questioned by, or given a handwritten letter by the PSNI public inquiry team, public order inquiry team, on the basis that she and others were wearing T-shirts expressing support for Palestine Action. And that whole issue at the moment is becoming a really, really polarising one, because, you know, people are saying if as much effort was put into prosecuting other crimes as is being put into finding people who carry signs or wear shirts expressing support for Palestine Action, then it would be a very different scene. Interesting story on the inside, because we know there very often in mid-August are bonfires which are associated with August 15th to mark the anniversary of the introduction of internment. It also would traditionally have been a day that the Ancient Order of Hibernians would have marched years ago. August 15th would have been a key date for the Ancient Order, I presume, because it's, I think it's the Assumption is the feast on August 15th. I think it's the Assumption is the Catholic Church feast on that day, and that would have been the day of the AOH march, and then it became tied up with the anniversary of internment, which I think was last, the actual anniversary has been over the course of the past few days anyway. And there is a big bonfire set up on Meenan Square. It's on the site of what's going to be a major 11 million euro development, or 11 million pounds development, excuse me. And some concern being expressed in the area, including by Sinn Féin and the Derry Bonfire Builders, unhappy with the statements from Sinn Féin. Two Sinn Féin MLAs, Padraig Tullarkey and Ciara Ferguson, have described the bonfire as anti-community. But the organisers have put a lengthy statement on their Facebook page saying the bonfire was a message of defiance of a community that's been ignored, insulted and let down by those in power. It then begs the question, as participants in the assembly at Stormont, are Sinn Féin now in power and therefore are Sinn Féin now the establishment against whom the community is rebelling? I mean, and have Sinn Féin now become part of the establishment rather than part of the response in Northern Ireland? I suspect a lot of people would say yes based on that story on the inside of the Derry News this morning. Irish Independent, interesting story on the inside. Family's fury after Swiss clinic helped Irish woman to die despite prior promises. Pegasus vowed it would contact loved ones in future after death of British man. Two families whose loved ones ended their lives at a Swiss clinic in secret say they're heartbroken that another family has been put through a similar ordeal. And we've heard the story here, and indeed later on we're going to be going into this in much more detail. The daughter of a County Cavan-based woman who ended her life alone at the same clinic told The Independent the first she knew of her mother dying was when a volunteer for the group sent her a WhatsApp message. That's it. 58-year-old Maureen Slough, who had a history of mental illness, travelled to Pegasus on the 8th of July, telling family and friends that she was going to visit Lithuania. Now, we will be speaking to Margaret Slough's daughter on the programme a little later on today. Looking at the Irish Times, and there's not, I must be honest, there's not been as much talk about the impending presidential election as I thought there would have been. It certainly seems to me there was a lot more going on in the background before previous presidential elections. We know that there has got to be a presidential election this year. Michael D. Higgins is reaching the end of his second term, so he has to step aside at this point. We know that there are basically, at this point in time, two nominees for the post. There is Mairead McGuinness of Fine Gael and Catherine Connolly, independent TD from Galway, who is a former Las Concorla in Dáil Éireann as well. But in the past two presidential elections, one of the candidates was Sean Gallagher, who would have been running as an independent and would have received nominations from local authorities. Now, he is warning the time is running out for candidates, and Sean Gallagher is saying, you know, we're at the point where it could be too late for people who are independent to get the level of support they need. That, you know, Gallagher speaking at how in 2011 he literally toured the state meeting councillors. And that's the challenge. If anyone is thinking to run now, you're going to have to get into the county councils, meet the county councillors, get them to propose it, get the county council to have a vote. And you've got to do that with five county councils across the country. And I am not aware of anyone reaching it. There's been talk of it, but I'm not aware of anyone really reaching out to or any county council meetings being organised at the moment. So a lot of talk about who may or who may not run. Fianna Fáil say they will make a decision late this month, early next month, but certainly in terms of independent voices coming, we haven't heard from any that I have heard who are making any serious inroads with county councils. And given some previous elections, will county councils be enthusiastic about nominating independents on this occasion? We'll wait and see. We'll see what comes out of the woodwork, but time is ticking if it's going to be an October election. The Irish Daily Mail this morning, interesting story on the inside, and this will resonate with many people in Donegal, particularly salmon fishers on the Donegal coast. Decline in Irish salmon numbers is off the scale. The number of salmon in rivers off our east coast has all but collapsed, and now the Federation of Irish Salmon and Sea Trout Anglers has warned unless something is done quickly, an entire part of the tourism sector will disappear. The ISST Secretary Noel Carr says the prevalence of salmon in East Coast rivers has completely collapsed. It's been a crisis over the past 5 years, and it certainly is going to have an impact on tourism. And we all know, and Noel Carr indeed himself is based in Glencullum Kill in Donegal, but we all know in Donegal the impact the diminution in the salmon fishing sector has had on the local economy. Irish Sun this morning. The front page story is an interesting one. Lock up gain murder tourists. Minister Michael Healy-Rae has blasted ghouls who are taking selfies at the farm of the murder victim, Mike Gain. He said those who post pics should be jailed for a year. He fumed, people have lost the plot and a sense of humanity. Murder tourism is the phrase that Minister Healy-Rae has used to describe. Essentially, what's happening is people are travelling to the farm in Kerry and they're getting selfies taken outside the farm. Now, look, a lot of us have, if ever we've been in Clare, we've gone to try and find the Father Ted house. And there is a thing that you go looking for a landmark on TV. You go looking for a well-known place and you get your picture taken there. Now, I've not managed it yet, but believe you me, next time I'm anywhere near Ennistymon, yep, I'm going to find the Father Ted house and I'm going to take a selfie of myself in front of it. Absolutely. And when it happens, you'll know it's happened because, like all other sad people, I will have it all over my Facebook, believe you me. When it happens, and it will, I will have the picture of my Facebook. So, you know, it will happen. I will take a selfie of myself outside the Father Ted house. No doubt about it. However, to take a selfie outside of the site of a murder is another question altogether. And Minister Michael Healy-Rae very upset that that is happening. Irish Daily Mirror this morning. Niall says thanks a million to himself. Niall Horan last year paid himself 2.2 million euro on the back of a sellout worldwide tour. New accounts filed by the Mullingar Man's company show that pay at the firm increased by 20%. The former One Direction star enjoyed the 2.2 million bonanza after a grueling tour schedule in 2024, which began in Belfast in February and ended in Colombia in October. Now, I suppose, look, it's his tour. It was a solo tour under his own name. He paid himself 2.2 million. And I suppose, what can you say? Fair enough. That there was a time, pre-Spotify and pre-online streaming, there was a time when the idea of a tour was to sort of drum up a bit of publicity to sell a record. Now, it's completely reversed. Now what you have is, very few people are making money now on recorded music because of streaming and your Spotify's, your iTunes and your Deezers and all the others. Not to mention the fact that you can access it now on YouTube and a million other platforms. So it's now got to the point where instead of the tour propping up the recorded material, what's now happening is the recorded material is propping up the tour, and it's the tour that's making the money. And the Irish Daily Star, Audrey needs a miracle. The mother of missing teenager Amy Fitzpatrick is fighting for her life in hospital. It's emerged 57-year-old Audrey Mahan, whose teenage daughter Amy vanished in Spain in 2008 and whose son Dean was killed by her now husband Dave Mahan, is in a critical condition with liver failure. If she pulls through this, it'll be a miracle, Dave Mahan said last night. And then inside again, Niall's profits go in the right direction. And we were talking about the presidential campaign. Not fit to be president, says Minister Dara O'Brien, speaking about Conor McGregor. So that's a comment there from, we saw that yesterday. Dara O'Brien was speaking over the weekend, and he says Conor McGregor isn't fit to be president. Well, I suppose we'll see what happens if Conor McGregor seeks and gets a nomination or not, and that remains to be seen. Let's go to Zoom this morning, and we're joined via Zoom by Councillor Michael McClaverty. He's, of course, Cathaoirleach of the Glenties Municipal District and based in the area of Clonmany. And unfortunately, Michael, you're here to discuss an issue that we've discussed before, both on the show and on news. And once again, people in that wonderful area of Donegal crying out for water.
Yeah, that's right, Donald. It's a whole disaster since early yesterday morning, Sunday. Early Sunday morning, people woke up to yesterday morning, getting up to the normal stuff and went to turn on the taps, turn on the showers, whatever, and no water, not a drop. So obviously, things kicked off then to try and get things resolving that. But as it turned out yesterday morning, initially, there was a bust, a serious bust at the time. That's led into more problems. It's led into the reservoir and got a hurt, basically, going that far down there, it ended up more or less dry, certainly below what was possible to pump out water anyway. The water, don't get me wrong, the water gang on the ground are doing their best. They got the leak or the bus fixed as such yesterday evening, late yesterday evening got it fixed, but there's still the problem then of the reservoirs down. So what started then, they started pumping the water from Dunfanaghy then towards Volcara, trying to get things going. That was working out as reasonable as it could, but then they ended up in a situation then, what they didn't see before was that I've started airlocking them, so that was a huge problem then, because so much had emptied out, Donald, between the leak and everything else, the bus and everything else, that the pipe started airlocking then. And as they explained to me then, to explain to the listeners, it could end up in a situation then, and microfining and such then, you could have a number of houses, you could have 1 to 5 going okay, and number 6 then could be airlocked. And this is going to be a situation then, if they couldn't sort of themselves, they may need plumbers and that type of thing. So that's something we haven't really seen before as such. But unfortunately, started yesterday evening and until today, at least until today, later on today, maybe this evening, and possibly for the odd people beyond that, they still won't have water.
And the other problem is, of course, I mean, they don't have, it isn't an unlimited supply in Dunfanaghy. So if they're using the Dunfanaghy supply to make up what's lacking in the reservoir in Falkara, you could easily come to a point where demand in Falkara is going to be so strong that it starts depleting Dunfanaghy, and you're just pushing the problem from Falkara down the road to Dunfanaghy.
Oh, exactly, Donald, 100% right. That's exactly what we're doing, and none of us want to be in that situation. There's two main problems here, believe it or not. One is obviously the lack of rain we've been having in the last while, and then secondly, the biggest problem is, alongside the busts that are happening, the inconsistencies of outages, the Irish Water team will not listen to us. We've been at them for years and years saying, you just need to build reservoirs, or at least the reservoirs that are there, refurbish them, extend them, build walls around them, whatever you want. But we're in the wettest county probably in Ireland. We're certainly the wettest country, I would say, safe to say, probably in the EU. And the one thing that falls out of the sky, Donald, for free, we're not conserving, not saving it. And I can't understand why Irish Water and their ideology and mentality cannot see the points we are trying to make. But the reality is they do not listen to us. For example, yesterday, I asked people via Facebook to start ringing in themselves, give their addresses, give their air codes, so on. The purpose behind that is, Donald, whatever area the most complaints are coming from, apparently when funding becomes available, that's what they look at. They don't necessarily look at Councillor McClafferty, or Councillor McClafferty and his 5 colleagues from the Glenties MD have rang in X amount of times. That necessarily is a help, yes, but it doesn't necessarily defy who should get a raise over what when it comes to funding. For example, other counties then, they could have 1,000 calls in from the locals. They're not going to ignore that. Or text message or emails, whatever the case may be. And that's where we're at, Donald. We all have to work together for the better good and try and make things better for everybody. But certainly when the water's off, highlighting it, ringing in with your address, with your air code, is paramount. For example, I had a few situations yesterday. People around the area, into Falkara, into Godahork, were ringing. And she, the person on the switchboard told them, there's no outage in your area. It must be a localised issue. That couldn't be further from the actual facts of what was going on, Donald. But that's where we're at, like. Yeah. So in one way, at least the exercise of yesterday of people ringing, I'd let them see what myself and my colleagues all over Donegal, not just ourselves here in the Glenties MD, not just the Glenties 6, but the whole 37, I'd let people see what we are faced with on a daily basis, a daily challenge all the time with Irish Water. And a lot of days, probably don't realise that until days like yesterday, where everybody was totally out. It was going on for hours and hours. As it went on till late night, still until today for some. Maybe they may have water, maybe this evening, hopefully, fingers crossed, the wall, but they may not either. For example, people there last week in Crystal Donal didn't have water for 5 days. They had neither water in the house, nor cows, neither water in the fields, and that they would rivers and one thing another where possible to try and get water for the cows, which obviously they managed. But it's a hell of an inconvenience, a hell of a problem. And I just see this whole situation getting worse going forward as we speak, Donal, because the way it is now, or as planned the night before Christmas time, that Donegal County Council have everything handed over complete to Irish Water ahead of Christmas time, and then it's going to be totally Irish Water full stop. And I think when that happens, we're going to be a different ball game altogether then, because you won't have any input whatsoever from the council. And who knows, the likes of myself, I'm getting well isolated at the minute from Irish Water, and maybe totally blocked from when they get full control, because they do not want me or others going to yourselves, going to Highland, going to newspapers, going to media, highlighting what's going on. They don't want that. They don't want the bad publicity, don't want full stop.
Well, but as we said, and you said there, and stay with us, Michael, you were saying that, the Falkara is being, the reservoir is being filled by drawing water from Dunfanaghy. I was asking, is that then in turn going to put Dunfanaghy under pressure? Joined by Aidan Kelly, who's manager at Arnold's Hotel in Dunfanaghy. He joins us on the line. Aidan, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning, Donald. How are you doing?
Very well, thanks. Aidan, I was suggesting that drawing water from Dunfanaghy to bolster Falkara could begin to put pressure on Dunfanaghy. From what you're about to tell us, that's already happening.
Yes, well, since the 12th of July, actually, Donald. We're lucky enough at the hotel here. We have two holding tanks up behind the hotel, and there's gravity feed into the rooms. But it wasn't until on the 12th of July, whatever the situation was with Irish Water, diverting water to Fouquier, I had no water come Monday morning. And I only discovered this about 9 o'clock during breakfast service. People were saying the showers weren't working upstairs. So what happened was Irish Water turned off the water. Our system then filled up with air. And then I had a major problem for, I'd say, 2.5 weeks until I got the plumber to eventually figure out what was going on.
Mm. I mean, obviously, the problem the is, Donal, I had no heads up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's an old building. It's a family-run hotel for 103 years. And it's just, it's nice to, but it's, a lot of it's gravity-fed, so it's no pressure and all, and you just don't discover these problems till the morning time. And it was a great heartache for me for 2.5 weeks, Donal, and Irish Water never gave me any heads up or any other business in town. And this is our height of the season, and I had so many complaints from people, but most people were understanding. But it, you're trying to explain Irish Water has turned off the water. It's a whole problem in the west here. And
and this is the part of the year that you're making your money, that you need the goodwill of your visitors, many of whom I know, given the nature of Arnold's Hotel, they're going to be repeat visitors as well. So, you know, you know them, they know you. And, you know, that's not business you want to lose.
No, no, no. Because they're not going to come back to Dunfanaghy. And then even the quiet people last night renting a house in the town here, and they were like, why is the tap water white, you know, it comes out all is it all chlorine, is it fluoride? They just they couldn't understand it.
Yeah, and it's funny you say this. I've just literally been handed a piece of paper by Shannon saying water not safe to drink in Port na Blah because it's so cloudy, which is exactly what you're just reporting to us there as well. Michael, you're listening to what we're being told there by Aidan. You're nodding your head. It's a story you've heard before all too often.
Yes, that's right, Donald, and obviously with the likes of Aidan there and his family trying to run a family business there, hotel, Arnold's Hotel there in Dunfanaghy, same as all the hotels and businesses around the area, in the local area. It is a huge problem, and it's not helpful either. Like, I just checked there, Donald, before you asked me back on there again. Like, I emailed Irish Water yesterday morning before 9 o'clock. You see there yourselves, you have proof there yourselves, Caroline, is it there?
Mm-hmm, yep.
I got no reply back yet. I asked in that email without delay, without ignoring as well, to put tankers rolling. Nothing. No word. One water tankers coming this way to try and avoid the problems that Aidan has talked about there that has been happening. I've asked for that numerous times. You know that, Donal.
No, indeed.
I've asked for that back around the 12th of July, pre the 12th of July. Going nowhere. Like, they're just totally ignoring us in Donegal. It's crazy. Totally ignoring us. But yet, when problems happen in Cork and elsewhere, there's no issue with tankers going. There's no delay. It's just, Irish Water, just left the phone, get them going. This is the much difference between night and day. Like, we have as much beauty here in Donegal as having Cork, Limerick, Kerry, Galway, whatever the case may be, and in other counties. But we deserve to have a God-given right of water as well when our visitors come here to pay us a visit or repeat visit, as you say, to Dunfanaghy Town, to Arnold's, to the Shannon, whatever the case may be. The visitors come here deserve to have their proper experience. They work damn hard all year, the same as the rest of us, and they look forward to that week or 10 days or 2 weeks that'll be Donegal or split between Donegal and somewhere else. They don't look forward to coming to a holiday and then having no water, unable to get showers, one thing or another.
It seems to me, Michael, part of the problem here is that the way Ishke Aaron approached these issues is on a place-by-place basis, that to their mind, the Falkara is one thing, and then Dunfanaghy is something else, and it's a support, na Blah is something else. And it was interesting that the person said to you, it's a localised issue. But the reason it's a localised issue is one thing happens, it has a knock-on effect to something else. And we know that if something happens in Falkara, it has a knock-on effect in Dunfanaghy. If it happens in Dunfanaghy, it'll have a knock-on effect in Falkara. That can have a knock-on effect over into Cador in the west of the county. It can have a knock-on effect back toward Termini, Kilmacrenan, and toward the east as well. That you can't look at this as a series of isolated little supplies in Dunfanaghy and Falkara and Gortahorik and Port na Blah. You've got to look at it as a whole, and the whole of the network needs to be addressed.
Absolutely, Donal, and this is a big issue. Like, but again, going back to it, there's, as like I said to Caroline last night, Caroline rang me last night, we talked about things briefly at the time. There's a serious communication problem within Irish Water. Irish Water, actually, like I said to Carolyn, Irish Water have actually addressed this themselves to us as councillors. They did in the last meeting there earlier on this year in the Radisson. They have in a meeting about maybe about a year ago, I was at down Galway. They have acknowledged and admitted there is issues within their communication. Like, that should not be, Donald, to be fair, because I'm sure no other business would function past a couple of weeks if there was issues with communication. I mean, it's like any business, if there's a problem, you sort it out. You find out, you get to the root of the problem, what's going on here, how can we address this, and you deal with it going forward.
Sorry, Donald.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to you, Aidan, yeah.
Because if the communication's not there, Donald, or as was yesterday, all mixed messages ending up then from the public. But I'm glad the public realised that and experienced that themselves, that they got that verbally themselves from Irish Water asking what was actually happening. Because
absolutely, I do want to go back to you, Aidan, because I mean, obviously, I'm sure you were making contact with Irish Water yourself and trying to get some answers. Mm-hmm. We know that Michael and his colleagues find it very difficult to get answers from Irish Water. Ishka Aaron, did you have any luck?
No luck. It just falls in deaf ears. Anytime I contact Irish Water, I just give my account number and all the details, and they were like, "We'll come back to you on that one." And I never get any response.
But if you and your plumbing team are addressing an issue in your hotel, you're not just going to go and fix an issue in one room. You're going to look at the whole pipe network. You're going to say, "Okay, well, if it's happened in room 1, 2, 3." Could it happen in room 246? Could it happen in room, 211? Yeah. And you're going to look at the entire network of pipes in the room and try to make sure that it's not just something isolated and see if it's had an effect elsewhere. It seems to me sometimes that what Ishka Aaron will do is they will, if they get a report of a burst pipe, they will fix a burst pipe and they won't ask what impact did that burst pipe have on A, B, C, D, E, F and G.
Yeah, because 12 hours is a long time with guests and they're saying they can't have a shower. And then I also in the last 2.5 weeks, I had a plumber here every second day, and it's us paying for the plumber too, because Irish Water initially caused this problem because it caused the air leaks and it messed up our whole heating system.
Yeah.
And we're going around changing valves all over the building, everything. It was just a mess.
And that isn't going to be cheap between the call out and the labour and the parts as well. Michael, we know that one of the big projects, and it's going to be funded, we understand, in part at least by the Apple money, is drawing water from the Shannon to bring to Dublin and get a whole new supply network for Dublin. Now, in that instance, it appears Irish Water can make a major investment backed by government in a huge infrastructure project. It seems to me that what we need to start doing is exactly what you said earlier, is looking at areas like Clonmacnoise, areas like West Donegal, the Rosses, etc. We need to start looking at those as a big integrated whole and have new systems that take in the whole of an area, not just individual little supplies. And that should be prioritised as infrastructural investment. And it should happen in Donegal. It should also happen in Cork and Kerry. And Irish Water need to give the entire country the same priority that at present they're giving to getting water from the Shannon over to Dublin.
Absolutely, Donald, 100% correct. I mean, we have a situation here at the minute now in Fulgarry, as you're aware of there. There's 30 houses proposed there for Fulgarry Main Street there, as you can, just to the left of the Maple store, there, the petrol station, just to identify the site behind the trees for people aren't aware. At the minute, that whole thing's up in the air at the minute because Irish Water can't guarantee supply and they certainly can't guarantee the outage for the sewerage. That's not our problem that they can't guarantee either one. This planning permission has been about there for a long time. They didn't have no issue the first time round. All of a sudden now they've an issue now the second time round because there was delays the first time due to another reason and it went for planning now again. But Irish Water have threw the spanner in the works as such now. It's up to them to come to Fulgarry and upgrade the sewage system, upgrade the water system, everything else. That is their problem, Dolan. That's not me or my 5 colleagues' problem. It's not the problem of the 29 potential families that will get those houses when they will be built. Plus, the number 30, the actual group home that was being designed there for the families of St Martin's across the road beside the doctor there, who at the minute are temporarily moved to Dunloe as a new housing because the place they were in at the minute was on foot apparently, Gordon Hickwa. Those people moved there in good faith. What the pretense of going back to Fulgarry again on getting this great new build and everything else? Irish Water at the moment of that up in the air. And as for the Shannon, Donald, I welcome what's happening there. Yes, if it happens. But I have my doubts and I have my concerns, and I'll say why. According to people living up that way, they tell me on a regular basis, It's over 100 years, Donald, since the Shannon was actually dredged. When flooding happens then around that neck of the woods, it's because the Shannon can't deal with what's going on. Well, as I say, I welcome what's proposed, but I am somewhat sceptical. If they're not able to get any day of the week on a low-cost budget thing with a lot of track machines and clean out a big river, if you like, as such, if they can't do that, I'm not so sure about how it's going to work going forward about taking the water out of it, unless they're going to do all these minor things first of all. Yeah. But I am sceptical when a minor thing can't be done. I find it a bit hard to believe for the bigger thing. But look, if it happens, fair play to them, good luck to them as they get it. But at the same time, we need the same here in Donegal as any other county would. And we're not asking for luck, we're just asking for a fair share of the pie, you know, which I believe at the moment we're not getting. And it's not fair to the likes of Aidan, hotels, other people in Fulcair saying yesterday with holiday home rentals and so on. Look, if this continues on, we're going to have to close up here. We can't continue on like this. Catfish in Fulcair, rest in Fulcair there, for example, yesterday. He had to cancel all his bookings. He was booked out fully yesterday. He'd cancel all his bookings. And I phoned him at 5 o'clock, as I said to Caroline. It was just, didn't matter that time, Michael. But one way or another, we're just opening the doors. We're going to chance on a wing and a prayer. We have a dribble of water coming here between, alongside that with the bottom, so on, in the shop there. We're going to try and get Huckster on for the evening to get going. Because literally, he says at the minute, Donald, he has lost thousands already this summer, as I'm sure.
And I'm sure, Aidan, you have as well, for exactly the same reason.
Yes, others have as well. Like, and that is that's the matter of the fact here. Like, as even like Aidan puts down there getting the plumber.
Yeah.
That's thousands of euros worth extra onto that business. The businesses are not getting this revenue in to turn it around then and put it out again outside of paying wages, paying electricity, paying water, paying the regular costs, paying staff.
Right, Michael, I'm going to have to push on. Listen, Michael McCafferty, thank you very much indeed for your contribution. You. Aidan Kelly at Ardnance Hotel there in Dunfanaghy, thank you very much indeed, Aidan, as well. You know, it's an issue. It's not the first time we've discussed it. It won't be the last, and we'll certainly be keeping a close eye on it, and hopefully things will change. But for now, both of you, have a very good morning. Welcome back to the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Now, joined in studio by Joe Corkery from the Special Needs Parents Network in Donegal. Joe, a very good morning to you.
Hi there. Thanks, Mary, for having us.
It's our pleasure. Joe, the Special Needs Parents Network has carried out some research to identify people's experiences with the respite service and find out really what needs need to be addressed. So I suppose really, first and foremost, what have been the headline findings of the research?
Yeah, so we initiated this research back last year because, as we were hearing from parents, this is not the first piece of research that's been done about respite in County Donegal. So we really wanted to understand the user experiences and, I suppose, the availability of respite for primary carers in Donegal. Respite is really important, obviously, for carers to give them that break to rest and recharge. It's important for the wider family so that the carers can spend time with their other siblings or you know, and give them the attention that they deserve. And it's also really, really important for the individuals with a disability to access, I suppose, the opportunity for independence and that social outlet. So respite is really, really important. I suppose the key findings were that, first of all, our primary finding, I suppose, one of the most important one for us, is that there's not enough information. So in order to do this research, we used a variety of methods. We had a survey with 127 participants, and we also had three focus groups. One of them with individuals with a disability who access respite, because we really wanted to understand what was their experience and why is it important to them. We spoke as well with a variety of parents and family carers who have children who may be adult children that access respite. So we wanted to speak to them. And we also spoke with parents of children who have very complex disabilities and medical conditions and would be considered life limited. So we wanted to hear from a variety of different, service users and those that experience it, because not one size fits all with regards to respite. So one of the most important things that came through loud and clear for us was that 100% of the people that we spoke to, over 150 individuals, didn't have enough information with regards to respite availability in County Donegal. Now, we know that, and Family Carers Ireland report in 2024, the State of Care report spoke about how respite is essentially, it's a postcode lottery. And unfortunately, in Donegal, we're not doing too well with that lottery. We're very poorly served when it comes to respite availability in this county, and that's been well documented over the years. And, you know, even for families, the security and to have the knowledge of what's available should they need it would be really, really valuable. 73% of family carers that we spoke to spoke about how they didn't even know who to talk to about respite availability. One family that we spoke to up in the north of the county, they are kind of elderly carers for their daughter who's in her mid-30s. Both of them have very significant health concerns. One of them is going through chemotherapy. The other one has recently had a stroke and they're caring for their daughter 24/7. They didn't know who to speak to about help, you know. And I think that's a really sad story. And that's one that we should be, you know, that needs immediate action.
And we know too that in certain cases, and indeed you mentioned the north of the county, we know there have been issues with some of the premises used for respite, for instance, in Inishowen. So what was happening is people were being told, well, you can go to Letterkenny. Now, even getting from Inishowen's Letterkenny for many people, and I suspect from the family you were speaking about there, it can be an issue. But we also know that in Letterkenny recently, there was an incident where there was a centre that had a certain amount of places set aside for respite for children with specific needs.
Yes.
However, for a period, there was an adult with very specific needs themselves needed to access that centre.
Yeah, absolutely.
And was effectively in that centre for a number of weeks. While that adult was there, because of the way the rules are structured, the children
couldn't access
those services. I mean, not local children and neither the children that were being, you know, referred down from elsewhere in the county. Now, the parents and the families that carry out this caring are doing very stressful work.
Yeah.
And sometimes maybe what we don't take into account is their mental health.
Their mental health,
I'm sure, I mean, they're going to need to decompress. They're going to need some rest and respite themselves. And if they are constantly denied access to respite because there's a lack of places and there's no consistency in what's on offer, that's not going to be good for them. And that must have an impact on them.
Absolutely. So 91% of the families that we spoke to spoke about how that respite availability or more respite would have a positive impact on their ability to care, or a very positive impact. One of the really interesting findings we found as well was 86% of families said that more respite would have a very positive impact on the wider family, including the siblings. We had a really lovely focus group where we brought together six family members of parents of children with very complex disabilities and very, you know, severe medical conditions as well alongside that. And, you know, we expected to hear about the toll that that caring takes on those families and also the medical management of their children. But what came through really loud and clear in that focus group was the worry those families have for the other children in the family, seeing that day in, day out, and not having the availability of respite here in Donegal. A lot of those families can access respite, but that respite is in Laura Lynn Children's Hospice in Dublin. And that is a 4-hour drive away at best from where we are here in Donegal. And that's all that's available to them. So, you know, I suppose in terms of the research that we did, it came across, and I do want to make the point that it came across those that access respite, the experiences are extremely positive. We had one family contact us to say that a mother said that she would not have been able to attend her parents' funeral without Seaview House being able to accommodate her at last minute. And that's fundamentally important for families, to not be able to attend your family's funeral because of your caring responsibility. There are a number of different types of respite as well, Greg, that that we wanted to mention. So there's, you know, the centre-based respite provision, like Ballincool, like here in Letterkenny, like Seaview in Mount Charles, like Riverwalk up in Carndonagh, like Drumbow, that's unfortunately been closed now for years and years.
And the reopening of the Riverwalk Centre in Carn, by the way, and there was a lot of talk about
that
is now coming on stream, and that's going to help an awful lot.
Yes, and that's three beds. Yeah, that's three beds that are shared between children and adults.
So
the provision is very, like, the capacity is,
it isn't the answer to everything.
It's not even a drop in the ocean in terms of the needs. There are other types of respite care. There's in the home respite care that's provided maybe by various organisations around Donegal, for example, like the Bluestack Foundation. There's alternative respite like that provided by Bluestack, provided by the iCare up in Bunkrana, who do phenomenal work.
Both great groups.
By Spree August Sport. Those guys are filling a really important hole for us, and a really important service that, you know, a lot that suits a lot of families and meets their needs. but they're not, they don't have stable funding sources.
Yeah.
And they are very reliant on fundraising and volunteerism in order to be able to meet their services. So that's definitely something that can change. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was a really good experience to do the research. We wanted to really get a picture of what it looks like for families around Donegal, and I feel like we've got that.
I want to hear the voice of one of the parents and one of the participants, because we have Maria on the line who is a parent. Maria, good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal. How are you?
Very, very well indeed. Maria, I just want you, if you would please briefly, to tell us your story, just to put this into context for people, because Joe is giving us the headlines from the research. You're one of the patients that spoke to Joe and her team. Tell us the situation that you're in.
Okay, so we've been in a dire situation for 4 years now, and we have an autistic son who is 13. He's pre-verbal, so he can't express himself, tell you his emotions, what goes on during the day or anything like that. He is a flight risk, and he can engage in physically challenging behaviour when his needs aren't being met. And if he has a sensory overload, say too much crying or stress in the house from younger siblings, he is a flight risk. So he basically, after COVID, the second lockdown and the birth of another child, he had loads and loads of meltdowns. He was having meltdowns morning, noon and night, literally, from the minute he woke up, shouting, crying, growling, sort of screaming all in one, jumping about, running, pacing in the house, up on furniture. And then he would be very unsettled during the night as well. We'd thought we'd got him to sleep, and he'd be up having meltdowns during the night, and everybody in the house was awake and no one was able to get any sleep or to function. And then eventually, through the lack of respite and lack of services, because we couldn't meet his needs with a new baby, his behaviour became physically challenging then, which was really, really difficult. And it was heartbreaking for us as a family, because he was trying to do the right thing, but we were so burnt out. We were worn thin, trying to keep the other two children, with three children, the other two children safe in the house, so that he wouldn't maybe pull hair or bite them or charge us. And we often, many a times, we've had to be locked in bedrooms, and to this day we still do, to keep the kids safe. So respite would have helped us in the early days, but we couldn't access it. And as Joe says, there's no clear pathway. We started this game 4 years ago, and there was no clear pathway to respite. And, you know, any time you were approaching the services, you were being shut down as a family. You know, they were just shutting you down and sort of cutting you off and didn't really want to deal with you, which was very unfortunate. And it was more ID services and CDNT. They didn't know. Nobody really knew how to get us respite. And we were being passed from pillar to post. We had a referral made through CDNT. And then I would contact ID services and they would tell us, why are you contacting me? Who gave you my number? You have your therapies. You have your strategies. And I was in tears on the phone. So we spent years sort of plugging away on the phone, writing letters. We did the NEHL, which is run through TUSLA, but they weren't able to help us get any respite. They can provide support for the other siblings, but they cannot get you respite. And there was no sense of urgency, Donal, which was really, nobody seemed to understand how urgent our situation was. And we were being told, don't worry, these NEHL meetings can run on for years. So we just stopped them because we thought, we don't have years, we need action. So eventually, we'd even looked at a shared care model, actually, down the country. We thought one summer we were going to have a break by having our child maybe in care for a few weeks. We were so excited about that, and we were really looking forward to it because we just needed sleep, sleep and sleep. And the other two kids, we've no quality of life. We can't do anything. We can't go anywhere as a family and do things. No park, no swimming pool, no cinema. I can't take my other two kids out in the car with my autistic son, so it has to be one-to-one in the car. He's either with mum in the car one-to-one or with his father in the car in the Jeep one-to-one, and that's sort of how we manage. So we're managing him by my husband taking off a lot of work time, you know, at the weekends especially, and critical periods, say all the holiday periods, are so critical, and it's where children are most likely to have the breakdown. So my husband's carrying all that. He's a farmer. He has to go back out at work again at night time to get his work done, because when our son is with him, he can't actually work. It's just an outlet for our son. We have respite once a month in Ballymacool, which we fought hard for. It took 2 years to get it, and the reason we got it, we learned the hard way, was by sending an email into your service, your say.
Yeah.
So that is really the way to access the respite, and more parents need to do that. But parents are so burnt out, they find it hard. But really, it had such an impact on our mental health. I just want to give you two examples, if that's okay. I remember once when my son was in the middle of a really bad meltdown, I went into the sitting room. My husband was in the sitting room. This was probably about 2 o'clock in the morning. And I said to him, I can't keep doing this anymore. I can't do it anymore. I can't do it. And he was sitting on the chair and he was leaning back into the sofa and his hands were gripping, you know, the sofa, the leather sofa. And he just said, I think I'm having a breakdown. And that was just it. And there was silence. We had nothing else to say to each other then at that point. There was nothing we could say. And then I remember another instant. There was one summer where we had no services whatsoever. And I feel it took us a very long time to recover from that summer because we're sort of in lockdown mode. We were in complete lockdown that summer. We couldn't get out and about or do anything. And I remember we were in the back garden and my son was having a really bad meltdown. A friend of mine who's also an autism mammy was coming down. We had our two boys booked in for the Fun Valley to do one of those cycling things that are adapted, you know, for kids that need it. But he was in such a crisis mode, he couldn't go. And I remember my daughter sitting on the side of the trampoline. So maybe she might have been 10 or 11 at the time. And she was just really limp and lethargic looking. And her head was down to the side. But her head was, you know, supported by the trampoline. And her eyes were downcast. And she was just so sad looking. My autistic son was having a complete meltdown. And then the toddler, maybe was he 2 or something at the time? 2.5 maybe. He was standing up against the wall. Because he's noise sensitive, he just couldn't take the shouting and the roaring at all. So the two boys were always triggering each other with noises and sounds. And he was standing up against the wall with his palms on the wall, facing the wall, and he was banging his head off the wall. He was just finding it so difficult. And I know that's maybe not a very strong image, but they're the two things that stand out for me. So eventually we were getting respite, but it wasn't enough. And then it can be cancelled last minute as well. As you mentioned, we had cancelled in February of this year due to an adult having to go into the services in Ballymacool. So obviously, if there's an emergency, the rest of the house is locked down and only the emergency can be there. Now, we had pictures up on the calendar for our son, so he was known he was going into respite. And then we had to deal with the fallout of that. So that meant it was a whole week end of extreme behaviours, sort of crisis mode, worn thin, trying to balance it all, trying to keep him calm. And it was just a nightmare because there's not enough respite. There's no emergency services. There's no standalone units for children who have more complex needs and need to be in on their own one-to-one. So if my child needs to be in one-to-one, so when he goes in, the rest of the house is shut down. No other users can use it. And that's probably one of the reasons why we do have limited respite as well. We can't get the respite that we need because the facilities aren't there. Whereas if there was a standalone premises in these houses with a different door, these other children who have more complex needs could access the house, and the house would still be available then to the other children. The 5 beds in Ballymacool would be available then to other children. So there's such a shortfall. And it's just unbelievable. So it got to the stage then last Easter where during a critical point, I think most people know at this stage that holidays when the kids are out of routine is so critical, and it's when the family's most at risk of breaking down, but especially the child. And it's really sad, Donald, to see your child regressing after you working so hard to balance everything, but they just need that outlet. And we had no support services whatsoever. I was completely burnt out. My husband was worn thin. I actually couldn't get out of bed that Easter. I had nothing left to give. And my husband was feeling the same. We just had nothing left to give. And I made the horrible decision of asking for long-term care. And it wasn't really what we needed, but I couldn't see a way out because, as I say, our crisis started in January 21. And it was the cumulative effect and the worn out. And like, we have to have a really low arousal environment in the house to keep our son stable. So that's a lot of shushing. Shh, 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 don't talk. Shh, what are you saying? Shh, and then, you know, all this sort of stuff. And like, my youngest child wouldn't run freely through the house at all. He's afraid of his older brother, and he'll always scan the rooms before he goes into it, and he's only four, to see where his older brother is. And like, I'd be telling him, you know, quiet, indoor voice, and we sort of have to limit, you know, games, and they can't play games like chase and hide and seek because it would trigger his older brother. And even when the youngest goes to the bath, I remember one evening there, he said to me, "Mommy, can I talk here now?" And I was like, "Yeah, that's okay, you can talk here." You know, and he'll often go to bed, when he goes to bed, he'll lock the bedroom door, the four-year-old, you know, when I'm doing the bedtime routine with him, because at times his older brother has come down trying to nip him or bite him if the routine has taken too long. And maybe we were laughing, because that's when I get one-to-one with our youngest. And so probably, maybe not the way it should be, but we can get, you know, a bit giddy and a bit of fun, and that just triggered his older brother. So we were living like that, and I thought, we just can't go on like this. And it was really affecting my older daughter. I was having to farm out my whole family and get so many friends and family involved to keep things going. And, you know, it's not like I can take her to her Gaelic or anything like that. I can't take my son in the car with her, because if they don't finish on time, the waiting triggers his behaviour. You know, I just can't do the things for her that she would like, or the places she would like to go or have friends over. So I made the call on behalf of the family, thinking I was doing the right thing, asking for long-term care. Would you believe it was easier to get long-term care out of county down in Longford than it was in our own home county of Donegal? What does that say?
Maria, thank you, Maria, for sharing that story with us. I mean, it's heartbreaking to hear, and I mean, no one can doubt that you love your son and that you love your family, and I'm sure that decision was heartbreaking. Joe, I'm going to very briefly go back to you, and Maria, thank you so much for sharing that, because you've given, I suspect, more context to this than 10,000 pages of statistics ever could. I mean, Joe, basically, all we need to do really is take a recording of what Maria's just given us, take it down to Dublin, play it before ministers and civil servants in the Dáil and government buildings and DOH headquarters and elsewhere, and say, right, that is the challenge you're faced with. We're going to have to deal with this.
Absolutely. I mean, you can really see firsthand the impact that it has on a family and on the siblings of the family. So we have a number of recommendations. I suppose where we want to go from here is, we have a number of elected representatives here in County Donegal that need to stand up for families like ours. And we want to hear from those folks, and we want them to push for better services in County Donegal. And that is, I suppose, the rally call that we would have based on our research and based on Maria's input.
Joe, we have to cut this. It's coming. It's long gone time for the 10 o'clock news, and with apologies to Donna Marie, but I really did
Thank
not
so
want
much.
To cut Marie off, because I think that did need to be heard. It's given us the context. Joe Corkery from the Special Needs Parents Network. Thank you very much indeed.